newspaper, riverreporter.com, and from listener donations at wjffradio.org.
Welcome once again to the Local Edition News and Information, keeping you connected in the Catskills of Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Coming up, we'll get into the latest on jobs and the economy around here, around the country. James B. Huntington on Work Shift Live. But first, because it is Wednesday, and because it's been a week since we talked to him, we want to find out the latest that's going on, the local news, from the River Reporter's Liam Mayo. Liam, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Thanks for being willing to come back and talk to me. obviously, I'm a bit distracted today, but I'm going through all the notes and checking things out. And, you know, last night on the more regional news, on the New York One channel, they're talking about cannabis legalization town hall forums in Orange County, neighboring Orange County to Sullivan County. And there's like there was a young Democrat who put his statement to that town board in support of the town's having dispensaries on TikTok. And it's gone viral on TikTok, even though town hall meetings don't usually go viral in any way. Like, nobody really shows up to them. So that was fresh on my mind from last night. And I come in today and I see you're covering similar discussions that were happening here in Sullivan County, especially at the Coshecton and Tustin board meetings. Before we find out what was said, is there a way for you to simply sum up what the actual question is before towns at this point?
Right. So the question before towns at this point is whether to allow the sale of marijuana or smoking lounges for marijuana in their towns. Now, that is because New York State legalized personal use of cannabis and marijuana statewide. That can't be changed, but it provided an exemption so that if towns didn't want it sold or if they didn't want smoking lounges for people to congregate and smoke together, they could choose not to do that. Now, it gets slightly complicated because the terminology for making that choice is opting out. So by opting out of that portion of the law, you are choosing to make those things illegal. And by choosing to opt in, you are choosing to make those things legal, which gets a little confusing. But at the end of the day, it's essentially whether or not you want marijuana sold in your town.
Right. And is this, I think the last time either you and I talked about this or I spoke with somebody else about this, there was also the notion that this isn't the final time that this question might come up. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. If a town decides now to opt out, so if a town decides to ban it now, they can go back and choose to reallow it at any time. But a town has to decide, if a town wants to ban it, they have to do that by December 31st. If you don't do anything as a town and it hits January 1, then you don't have a choice. You have decided by doing nothing that marijuana will be legal to sell in your town. So you can choose to make it illegal now and then legalize it later on. But if you decide either through inaction or through discussing it that it's going to be legal now, you can't go back on that decision later.
Okay, with all of that in mind, then, what happened at the Coshecton and Tustin board meetings? Were they voting on that question at the most recent meetings?
Yeah, they were, it's an ongoing process. So at this meeting, they were essentially just deciding that they as a town board don't want marijuana. Both town boards decided that they were going to move forward with opting out, so making it illegal. And there's still a long process of public hearings and public referendums before that, so it's not done and dusted yet, but both towns are moving in the direction of banning it. But it's interesting that you mentioned the other one going viral, because that is not to the same extent, but a little bit of what happened at both of those meetings.
Give us some idea of what people were saying, whether it was people on the town boards or people from the public. What were you hearing? What's the discussion like?
Yeah, well, discussion has been pretty quiet, like, in months before, because this has been an issue discussed for months. It's mostly just been the town boards talking about it. But both at the Coshecton and at the Tustin town board meetings, a lot of business owners showed up and said, hey, it would be good for business to allow this, or at least to consider allowing this. Business owners at the Coshecton town board meeting said essentially that if you choose to opt out now, even if you opt back in later on, that's too late. Dispensaries will already have established themselves in the towns that choose to legalize it, and they'll already have like gotten the sign from Coshecton or from Tustin that those towns don't want their business. So there's a possibility that by opting out now, even if you choose to opt back in later, you're forever giving up a little bit of that business. And it was the same sort of thing at Tustin too, but sort of the interesting thing at Tustin was a lot of people who were talking about it from the public said that this was essentially the first time they were hearing about it at that one meeting. So it's been a discussion that's been happening for a long time at the town board level, but I think it's starting to reach more of the general public and more of the business owners who might be affected by this law. And in Tustin, sort of related to that, various, I believe, private figures have put together a cannabis marijuana presentation with one of the people involved in creating the law, David Holland, which is going to be held at the Narrowsburg Union on Saturday, October 9. So they were saying that if anyone wants more information, they can go to that September 9th meet or October 9th meeting.
Right. All right. So, like you say, people have been talking about this for a while, and it's also a complicated issue. There's confusion over exactly all of the ramifications of this law that was passed in New York State, as well as how are the various aspects of the law going to be implemented. The conversation that you and I are having right now are just one small part of that, but this is something that we have been covering and we're going to keep covering, and we'll come to you for some of that too. Over to Wayne.
One thing on the confusion of it. That is, I think, playing a big part in towns deciding to opt out. In Coshecton specifically, a lot of the town board's discussion has been that they don't know enough yet to think it's a good idea to opt in, that there hasn't been enough guidance from the state level to talk about how this law is going to be implemented. So deciding to make it legal is a decision that they can't really make in good conscience. So that's just a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, the state is just now in the past week putting together specific panels that are going to be working on this issue and how the law is implemented across the state. So it's still early days, yet decisions need to be made. Conversations need to be had. Wayne County, National Recovery Month. We're halfway through it now in Wayne County. September's National Recovery Month. Is this a new thing for Wayne County?
I don't think it's a new thing for Wayne County. I believe they celebrated it last year, or celebrate is probably the wrong word, but they proclaimed it and honored it last year as well. But it's just an ongoing recognition of people who are struggling in the community and an attempt to sort of elevate their voices and get rid of a little bit of the stigma around people who are struggling. National Recovery Month is sort of a national effort, but at the Wayne County level, it's aimed at people in recovery from drug and alcohol use or with mental health issues. And at the Wayne County Commissioners meeting and through various public initiatives, they're trying to sort of let people tell their stories of recovery and encourage people to seek recovery and reduce a little bit of the stigma around it.
Right. Well, that sounds good. And again, just for the listener to know too, this is another issue that we cover here regularly on Radio Catskill, especially the first Tuesday of the month, as we check in with the Kingfisher Project right here on the local edition. Of course, we also get these follow up reports from other guests, such as Liam. Now, is there anything else on that one, Liam?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. So moving on then to Sullivan County, news of the legislature. Now, of course, you know, we know that labor shortages are impacting all sorts of fields, all sorts of walks of life, all sorts of businesses. But over at the Sullivan County Legislature, they're discussing a number of human services concerns at their meetings this past week, including the fact that the care center at Sunset Lake is understaffed. This brings up a couple of questions for me. But first, what were they saying about them being understaffed? What do they want to do about it?
Right. So apparently, according to those meetings, the need for staff is so critical at the care center at Sunset Lake that they're going to offer signing incentives for new workers. And those bonuses range from a total of $4,500 for a full-time residential nurse, registered nurse, to $1,000 for a part-time certified nursing assistant paid out over 6 months. Apparently, the current shortage is so bad that current staff members have been working extra shifts, and they're also trying to give a little extra money to those staff workers who have been working more than they should, just to make sure that the people under their care are being properly cared for. But yeah, it's just they really need people, and
is there any indication as to whether this is just the same general worker shortage that we're seeing in other industries, or is this in any way related to the other changes that we've been discussing for the last year about the care center at Sunset Lake and it being given to another company to basically take care of it? Does this have anything to do with that, or is this just the general work shortages overall?
There wasn't anything said specifically about it. I can imagine, or I can speculate, that if there are more general sort of turmoils in the structuring of the organization, then that could, like, impact staffing levels. But there wasn't anything specific.
Nothing's really indicating that in the conversation so far. Then I guess the next question is, the last we were talking about Sullivan County Legislature, we were talking about people complaining to the legislature, complaining about the legislature in the pages of the River Reporter and on these airwaves, that not enough was done with COVID relief funds, the ARPA funds, in terms of employment, specifically funds that would go to benefit public health and health concerns in the county. This seems like a story that overlaps with that one.
Yeah, it's not a direct one-to-one comparison. Again, this wasn't mentioned in the conversations itself, but if there are these organizations having staffing concerns and requiring sort of extra money to alleviate those staffing concerns, the fact that there is this pile of ARPA money that isn't being allocated towards those when it is specifically directed towards public health concerns, feels a little, it feels like there's an implicit connection there. And there's sort of another area of that as well, where the Health and Family Services Department is also understaffed. There was a conversation a while back about outsourcing some of their services, and that conversation has since changed, and they're only looking to outsource specific services that they cannot provide in-house. But there's just this chronic understaffing at some of these very important agencies. So,
all right. Well, I thank you for being on top of that. And again, all of these things that we talked about tonight, especially the cannabis legalization rollout and how it impacts local towns and the ongoing public health stories that impact Sullivan County and other parts of our listening area. These are ongoing stories, so we're going to want to come back and talk to you about them again. Of course, before that happens, Liam, listeners will be able to see your work in the latest edition of the River Reporter that goes public tomorrow. And also, listeners will be able to hear you this weekend giving us the headlines, local news for Radio Catskill. Liam, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Liam Mayo from the River Reporter will be back with us next week as well. This is a local edition. Stay tuned. We got Work Shift Live coming right up.
The Radio Catskill Community Awards, September 30th, honoring our healthcare heroes for making a difference. Nancy McGraw, Sullivan County Public Health. Julie Pizzal, The Kingfisher Project. Sullivan 180. Wayne Memorial Hospital and Community Health Centers. And Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. Join us at Calicoon Hills, September 30th. Ticket information at wjffradio.org.
All right, here we are once again. It's that time on a Wednesday evening where we talk about the latest in jobs and the economy around our listening area and around the country. And for that, we go to James B. Huntington for Work Shift Live. Hello, James.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, listeners.
Well, James, we've got a lot to talk about tonight, but it isn't often that you come to us having worn two hats here on Work Shift Live, and I just wanted to say congratulations on your music DJing stint last week over on Ramble Tamble.
Well, thank you. That was an enjoyable cameo, and that's on podcast. Anyone who wants to hear the history of my life through music, that is the most recent Ramble Tamble. That was Thursday night, and it ran for 2 hours. Seemed to go well. A very wide range of music,
yes,
which I like personally. I played.
There were some real surprises in there. I was aspects of your life and music that I never anticipated. And it was great to hear all of that. Sounded like a lot of fun. And again, that was last week's Ramble Jamble. You can find it on the archive at wjffradio.org. But back to what we usually talk about, which is jobs in the economy. And I don't know, the economy is impacted by our recovery from this pandemic. The pandemic we're still in the middle of this pandemic. And people, I just can't believe how many people I've encountered online mostly this week who are not happy about the what they call the Biden mandates, vaccine mandates. Of course, they aren't all from President Biden, but what news do you have in terms of mandates, vaccinations, and what do you expect for its impact on the economy?
Well, this is something he announced 6 days ago. This past Thursday, he said that we've been patient and laid down some laws saying that, one, all companies with more than 100 workers are going to have either the employees vaccinated or weekly testing for them. He said that healthcare workers, federal contractors, and the vast majority of federal workers, actually all of them, will need to be vaccinated in order to continue. And so those are some big things. He said it might affect 100 million workers, but it's an alternative to trying to make it mandatory for everyone, which he really can't viably do. So this is a big change, and it is messing some people up, so it's hardly a wonder that some people are complaining about it. They had a good and stern editorial in the New York Times explaining that all these people who want the personal freedom of not being vaccinated are infringing on the personal freedom of many other people to go around without being endangered with getting the virus itself.
Yeah. And you don't need the editorial board of the New York Times to tell you that. I think most of us can see that, and why some folks are willing to talk about freedom without thinking about how they're impacting others, or talk about their choice and not realize their choice is making a choice for the rest of us. Well, that's been my frustration, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. What do you think this will take, and what impact will it have on the economy and employment overall?
It will take. It may hurt in the short run, but it will help in the long run. You see, we have a problem that's holding back the economy still consistently, and it's that cases are staying about even though it's almost exclusively a pandemic of the unvaccinated now, and deaths are still going up and up, but at the rate they're going, I don't know if this will continue, but in a month or a month and a half, it's going to challenge the absolute all-time highs in deaths, daily deaths, before there was even any kind of vaccine available. So it's killing a great deal of people, and it is endangering, it's giving chances of the infection to all kinds of people who are vaccinated, making the rates much worse. For someone who's unvaccinated, your chance of getting it right now is vastly higher than it was even at the absolute peak of the pandemic back in January. So there, it has been stopping people, slowing people from hiring, slowing people from moving back into the office. A lot of companies, all kinds of companies, have announced delay after delay for getting that going, which would provide stability and ultimately probably more jobs. So when we get over an initial hump with this, with employment being slowed by people who are not vaccinated, it's going to be better because more and more people will choose to get vaccinated here. And the pandemic, the effects of the pandemic are going to slow with these curves starting to go downward again.
And just while we're on the topic, just for the listener more so than you, James, I just want to point out that the latest numbers from Sullivan County Public Health show 201 active cases that we know of. And to put that in perspective, that's just 5 cases away from being the most active cases we had since the second peak of the pandemic, which was this past fall into the winter, December,
and it's
January.
Almost all among the people who are unvaccinated. So those of us who are vaccinated are moving along a little bit of caution in our lives with too much exposure and so on, but mainly it's the set there. We're getting 20 or 30 new cases a day here in Sullivan County, and that's really way high considering our population and considering how many people have had the shots.
Okay, well, getting a little bit away from the pandemic, but of course you can't get too far away from the pandemic. But some report about poverty, American poverty falling in the past year. And I think that does have a little something to do with the pandemic. What is that about? Can you explain that to us?
Yes. Well, we have the headline saying that poverty fell last year. A real reason for that was the benefits given out for the pandemic, for the higher unemployment and such things. It was large enough that it made a big dent. The thing is that poverty is defined completely by income. It's $26,000 and some for a household of four. That puts you below the poverty line if you make less than that automatically. It doesn't consider a great number of things. I've had issues with how they report poverty because it seems to keep rolling on, although the levels of it, what it means to be in poverty has changed vastly over the past 50 years. I can remember growing up when somebody who was considered poor often meant they didn't have enough food, they didn't have anything in their house, the sad reports of people who couldn't celebrate Thanksgiving because they couldn't possibly afford a turkey, and really, they were wearing rags, terrible clothes. Most people in poverty, you wouldn't know if you saw them somewhere. They sort of look and act like everyone else. They just have less money and more things they need to do without than most of the rest of us. So it was automatic, really, that poverty fell last year, given that money coming into households was going up. But it's still a good thing.
looking at the employment side of the conversation, what can you tell us about any snapshots of where we are in terms of jobs, available jobs, employment right now? What's going on?
Well, jobs available hit a new high. We're now at 10.9 million. I don't know if jobs available is really an overstatement. I have long said that job openings do not mean job hirings, but there are 10.9 million advertised job openings out there. We're going to have a big turn on these things now that around Labor Day the extra employment benefits did go away. We're going to have a lot of telling information coming in. It's October 8th is the date of the next employment situation summary. That's a week later than it usually is. It will tell a great deal how many people ran back to work after losing these benefits. I'm expecting that if it's less than a million, it will generally be just what's been happening, and the effect of those things has not been super large. But if we turn in 2.2 million new jobs or something, that will be a loud and clear statement that many people were dependent or choosing to take, and we can always just argue that, the employment benefits, and now felt they had no choice but to go back to work.
Right. I think we've got time for maybe one more topic area. What would you like to discuss?
Okay, let's see. This is interesting thing that came out. It was a Harvard Business Review headline. Actually, this is not a new story, but it's pertinent now. Is if you are so successful, why are you still working 70 hours a week? And yeah, if you envy people who are making 150, 200,000 a year, such, here's a reason why you might not want to envy them as much. They're working longer and longer hours, and it's essentially required. They're in organizations where they really feel they have to do that. It's a little reminiscent of a John Grisham novel that was called The Firm, What They're Doing, and that was about a law firm that required recruited people who had poor backgrounds and would easily be tied into the firm and work super long hours, as a lot of lawyers do anyway, while trying to make partner. And they're saying that organizations here tried to find insecure overachievers, and they were the kind of people who could be, I don't know, conned is a little strong a word, but coerced or encultured into working 70 hours a week. Mm. So it's not a terrible thing to have to do for a short time, 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year. But when you look at your last 5 years and you realize you've been coming into the office 6 or 7 days, putting in this amount of time, you might really want to question the overall effect on your life. Yeah. So this is, it's remaining a problem, but any idea that people at the top of these organizations have easier work lives is total nonsense.
Okay, and you know what? We got to go pretty quick, but maybe let's real quick, just if you can, tell us what's been going on with gold, silver, the dollar. I know at least for silver, it's been hovering just around $24 for a good month or so. It used to be up around 27 or so. What's going on with the precious metals and the dollar?
Today's closes, gold $17.95, silver $23.85. The dollar, there are measures for it, but it's really hanging out in the same sort of range it's been in before. And the stock market had dropped about 1,000 points over the past week, but it rebounded 200 and some today. I have to be optimistic about the stock market because the trillions of dollars now in private and corporate hands has to go somewhere.
It's got to go somewhere. There you go. All right. Well, James B. Huntington, I want to thank you once again for giving us the latest on jobs and the economy around here, around the country. Will you be on next week?
Yes, I will.
All right. It's a date. We'll do it again. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, listeners.
Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living.
that's going to do it for Local Edition tonight. That's it for Local Edition. We'll be back tomorrow evening to do it all over again, 6:30 every Monday through Friday. Don't miss any episode of the Local Edition. Go sign up for our podcast, then you'll always have it. Radio Catskills, Local Edition. This is WJFF.